Welcome to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio with author, speaker, and your host, Pat Rulo. Serving you a generous helping of everything you need to know to help you and your loved ones stay safe during any doctor or hospital visit. The program is not intended to replace medical advice from a licensed professional, but rather to encourage you to become a well-informed participant in your health and well-being. And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
You could think of yourself as an unpaid mystery shopper. You could say to them, I just want you to be aware that this and this and this are happening. And just say, I'm not complaining, but I just have some suggestions. That they want to hear what you have to say. So never underestimate the power of your feedback, because it does make a difference.
Hello and welcome. I'm Pat Rulo, your hostess and the voice for patient safety. So happy to be back together again. Wow, aren't the weeks flying by? Soon it'll be spring, and that's always a good feeling, don't you think? I know I'm looking forward to it. I'm also looking forward to today's show, because you just heard a snippet from today's guest, a new friend who started a company to help hospitals improve the patient experience by employing mystery shoppers, spies, if you will, to anonymously gather data and information and then report back to the hospital with the goal to shine a light on how patients perceive their experience. That would be the perfect job for me, as the experience I'm about to tell you should send a hospital administrator into orbit. If only I were a secret mystery shopper. So let's get ready for that. Get cozy and comfy. Turn off your phone. That's right. No radiation or interruptions during our valuable time together. Because right now, it's time for the hospital hazard of the week. Is this normal? Normal. According to the dictionary, normal. Conforming to a standard, usual, typical, or expected. Now I may have a problem with this definition, because what is typical or usual can change over time, and it does. So what was usual 10 years ago may not be usual today. And that means that normal changes with time. And as more and more people come to believe that something is usual, it becomes normal. And the definition also says conforming to a standard. Now what if there is no standard? What if everyone is running around making their own rules with no oversight? What if you went to the grocery store and the cashiers slapped you each time you checked out because the store owners had no standards, or the standards were cashiers call the shots? Is that normal? The odd word in the definition of normal, again, which is defined as conforming to a standard, usual, typical, or expected, is clearly the word expected. What I expect to be normal may not be normal for you. And don't get me wrong, I'm as thrilled as punch that the word expected is included within this definition, because it adds an interesting twist to the word normal. So you're asking, I'm sure, what does this have to do with healthcare and hospital safety? Huh, plenty, because we are in the midst of a new normal. Incremental changes creep into our everyday landscape ever so slowly that we no longer see it as not normal, meaning not expected. It may be viewed as normal because it is so prevalent and commonplace that it seems normal. Politicians lie in broad daylight in front of the microphone, in fact, erasing emails from a private server that never should have been used in the first place, and boldly and brazenly running for president. The masses don't even blink, don't bat an eye. It's normal for politicians to lie, steal, cheat, and run amok. Military on our streets, tanks invading small towns, police brutality, riots, looting, shooting. Ah, another normal nightly news story. Everyone yawns and goes to bed. A military state is quite normal. White lines in our skies, spewing chemicals and other mysterious nanoparticles all over us as we believe what we are told. Vapor trails from commercial airlines. It is normal for a blue sky to be streaked with zigzagging white lines. Normal, I say. microwaving our children in school as big business shoves wireless laptops as freebies, doling out money for conforming. Oh, yes, it's so normal for our kids to have daily headaches, heart palpitations, heart attacks, brain cancer, autism, and attention deficit disorders. It's normal to counter this by installing defibrillators in schools and handing out Adderall and Ritalin like jujubes. So what set me off? A simple visit to the hospital last week. That's what initiated this rant. My mom had an appointment at the hospital's heart and vascular clinic scheduled for 11 o'clock. And because Bob was driving, we got there early. Luckily, though, because I was pushing my mom in the wheelchair for quite a distance, because the parking garage closest to the heart clinic was reserved for hotel guests and employees. Heart patients trekking through the downtown streets, huffing and puffing, dragging oxygen tanks, nearly tumbling out of their wheelchairs due to bumpy roads and curbs, while healthy hotel guests and employees park with ease and bop on over to the hospital with nary a gasp or a choke. Interesting and irritating. Next, we enter the heart clinic and head over to the check-in desk. A heavyset gal with long, jello-red dyed hair, wearing what looked to be some sort of a kid's tiara and long, sparkly disco earrings, barked, "Next in line!" Next in line? Where was I? In the return line at Walmart? How can I help? I'd like a greasy hamburger and a chocolate shake. I mean, really? Next in line? How can I help? Now, those words aren't necessarily bad ones to use if delivered with a kind smile and compassion and genuine concern. But this chick was clearly bothered and not afraid to show it as she munched on her bagel and strawberry schmear. And let me also comment on her appearance. Now, I know we were in a heart clinic, but really, do I really have to see her heart? Her top was scooped so low that I nearly saw her belly button. And I can only assume she wore clothes such as this to show off the two bizarre tattoos all over her breasts. As I attempted to make eye contact instead of tattoo contact, she flicked her head in the direction of the waiting room chairs and said, "Have a seat." And so we sat for nearly an hour as we watched everyone else in the room get called in to see their doctors. New people streamed in, only to receive the same nasty bagel schmear greeting. At about 45 minutes into this, as even the new people had come and gone, I got up quietly and politely approached the bagel-chewing gal. She said nothing, but raised her eyebrows at me as if questioning my presence. We've been sitting here for nearly an hour. Is the doctor in? With a look of utter disgust and disdain, she replied, "Yeah, he's here." And she resumed smearing her strawberry schmear on her next bagel bite. I sat back down with my mom and I said, "I'm writing a letter to the hospital. This is not right. Why would they put someone at the desk dressed ready to go to some low-class nightclub? Why would they allow their employees to eat while checking in the patients? Why would they put their worst communicator at the front desk? Why would they want this, her, to be the first impression? Why? Because it's the new normal, that's why. Because according to the definition of normal, she is conforming to a standard, the standard being no standard. Therefore, her look, her demeanor, her attitude, her words, and her disdain for her job is usual and typical. But here's where the last word of the definition trips the whole thing up, and that is the word expected. I did not expect this, nor should I expect this. This type of treatment, her behavior and attitude, was not something I was anticipating as something likely to happen. But sadly, and very sadly, from looking around at the reactions of the rest of the patients, this was normal, usual, typical, and no one seemed to notice. Now, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Perhaps they were too ill and not feeling well enough to take notice. This is what I mean when I say that when small changes creep into the scene ever so slowly, they eventually become viewed as normal. But folks, this is not normal. It should not be expected nor tolerated. The patients coming to this hospital are sick. Their family members are frayed, delicate. It's bad enough to park 10 minutes away and have heart patients test their stamina as they hoof it across major streets and wait for an hour to see their doctor without being pummeled at the front desk by someone who needs to find another job. None of this is normal, and we should not allow it to become normal. And that is why I'm going to practice what I preach and speak up. I'm writing a letter to the CEO of the hospital. I'm telling everyone I know about it. I don't want to do business with a hospital who permits their frontline people to expose their tattooed breasts at me, who chomp food in my face, and who treat me like the garbage I saw laying on the city streets. My mom doesn't deserve that. The room full of sick and fragile patients don't deserve that, and you certainly don't deserve that. This is not normal. It is not expected and should not be tolerated as the new normal. And let's take this a step farther. Realize what is becoming normal these days. Call it out for what it is. If we accept cheap behavior from our lawmakers, if we allow big business to spray us and microwave us and vaccinate us, if we allow the government to quietly prepare us to accept military on our streets and in our neighborhoods, if we accept that our kids' education is all about the testing and funding, if we permit others to abuse us in plain sight, then this will become normal. Please, take this week and look about. Pay attention to what you see, what you hear, what you read, and what you feel. And to ask yourself, based on the definition, should this be what you expect? Is this normal?
Bring the heat.
Want even more information? Purchase a copy of Pat's book at speakupandstayalive.com. Once again, it's speakupandstayalive.com. Or you can call Pat at 440-725-5462.
Hot. Bring the heat.
And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
You are listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio, and I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, the voice for patient safety. Often on this program, we talk about the patient experience from the patient's point of view. But what about hospitals or a doctor's office perception of the patient experience? How do they determine exactly what the patient experience is so that they can take action to improve it? Do they rely on patient satisfaction survey scores, complaints, anecdotes, hunches? Well, the answer could easily be healthcare mystery shoppers. These undisclosed shoppers act like normal patients and attempt to make appointments via the telephone, call for information, or pose as patients or visitors in patients' rooms with the goal to shine a spotlight not only on an organization's shortcomings, but also to identify extraordinary behavior as well. So who are these mystery shoppers and where do they come from? And what a great idea. I mean, they work for restaurants and retail. Why not for healthcare? Well, our guest today is a CEO of a company whose purpose is to help healthcare providers understand, manage, and improve the perception patients have of them. She is Brooke Billingsley of Perception Strategies, a company that consults with healthcare organizations across the United States to develop customized research studies aimed at improving HCAHPS scores. And those are the scores that are tied to reimbursements derived from patient satisfaction survey results. Brooke is a well-respected keynote speaker for nationally known healthcare organizations such as the Barrel Institute, Dignity Health, and Press Ganey. She is the author of several books, such as The Perceptive Patient, a healthcare consultant's own cancer journey, talking about her own personal story. Brooke is the creator of some fabulous 3-minute videos on best practices in healthcare called the Patient Experience Toolbox. And she built the company to be the country's leading provider of healthcare mystery shopping using a customized online system that has led to over 500,000 healthcare encounters utilizing hundreds of shoppers across the country. It's such a new and exciting topic for us. We haven't talked about this before, so let's get started. Welcome to the show, Brooke.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks for the great intro. Appreciate it.
You are welcome. So happy to have you here. Well, I would like to begin by getting to know you a bit better. You started this important work to improve the patient experience. Was this before, during, or after your own cancer journey?
So my husband and I started it in the late 90s. And he came from a healthcare background where he was director of marketing and used to watch over all of the feedback that was coming through the surveys that patients would send in, and realized that it was after the fact and didn't know what to do with something that happened last week or last month or 3 months ago. And so he started the concept of mystery shopping. I then came from a background that was indirectly dealing with healthcare. I was the CEO of Make-A-Wish Foundation and was dealing with the healthcare setting as far as the children and the referral process. And he started to put together a package, and I said, I think that this could be a great program that could go national. And so that kind of started us down that road of talking to hospitals, getting them acquainted with the idea. Of course, they knew retail, but they didn't know healthcare. And so we've done this now, again, for, it's going on 18 years, I think. We just celebrated our 18th year last month.
Wow.
And so I was diagnosed December of 2011, and then went through 16 months of cancer treatment, which gave me a different perspective on all the research that we had been gathering up to that point.
That's what I was thinking. I didn't know when that cancer journey fit into the building of this business, and I then really imagined that that totally changed your perception of healthcare and the patient experience.
Well, you know, you set up these studies, and at the beginning, they were pretty innocuous in that they were more frontline encounters. Mm-hmm. And then I would say over the last 7 or 8 years, they've become extremely targeted, meaning that hospitals are zeroing in on specific service lines or specific clinic areas or ambulatory care, and they want to improve. And so there's a very concerted effort to put together a program and a very targeted, whereas shoppers might be going in for a new patient visit, or they might even have an x-ray on something that they had pre-existing. And so they were getting very detailed. And so you set those up, and the patient goes in, and they have their own personal feelings because they probably have been patients more than likely in other areas of their geographic location. And then you delve a little bit deeper, and we start doing clinical deep dives where you look at what's the barrier from the clinical standpoint looking out. What do they see as the barrier from creating a great patient experience? And then you become a patient. Mm-hmm. And the aha for me was, oh, the emotion. Yeah. We forget about it until we're in it with our own family or personally with ourselves. The emotion tied to somebody saying to you, you have cancer, yeah, kind of flips your world upside down. And so I think for me then, improving the patient experience became even more relevant, because I don't think once you are a consultant, you ever stop consulting, at least in your head. People may not have hired you, but you still have opinions you'd love to share, right?
Right.
And so I think for me, once I got over the shock, it took me about 2 weeks to get over the shock, because, of course, it happened 2 days before the holidays.
Oh.
So I wasn't going to get any real news for a couple of weeks. And so the unknown is the worst part. I tell people who contact me who've been diagnosed with cancer, and I always say, at the beginning, the not knowing all the details is probably the hardest, mm-hmm, most difficult. Because once you know, you can deal with it.
Right.
But once I got over that part of it and, you know, started to put together my research brain and the plan and how I was going to address it, I just realized, wow, okay, the emotion that's tied to this. There are times when, and I've talked to people who are in leadership roles. I talked to a CEO recently, and he just went in for a surgery that was related to cancer, and cancer runs in his family. And he said, here I am running two hospitals. And he said, what is it about us? We're in a leadership role that when we're in a patient bed, that we change into a different persona.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, we're vulnerable.
Yeah.
First of all, you're not feeling well. Second of all, you're probably on some kind of medication, which you're not functioning up to speed. And the other part is that you're at the mercy of all those who are taking care of you, especially if you're not getting out of the bed. You're at the mercy of everyone coming in to help you. And so your empowerment has been taken away. And so you see your care through a different lens. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you become maybe less vocal and not wanting to upset people because you don't want your care to be impeded, or someone to go back and say something to your caregiver who's going to be with you for the next 8 hours. So it changes, and it changes the way you experience it. Now, do you have opinions about it? Sure. And are there things you want to change when you get out? Definitely. But the advantage of what we do is that we then can be the eyes and ears for the patient without them feeling more vulnerable in that maybe someone finds out that they had an opinion. Mm-hmm. So the data that we gather becomes more anonymous and collective so that we start to look at themes and things that are happening on site.
I've interviewed several physicians or people that were in charge of the administrative side of running a hospital, and they said the same thing. Their whole perception of what they thought they were doing well completely shifted once they were either in bed as the patient or, say, had a family member there. So I guess that's the positive and the upside of that is that you do really get to see it from the patient perspective.
Right, right. Well, the interesting part about being in the hospital, I remember one day we were, because we worked with the Cleveland Clinic, and we've been working with them since 2003, and we were visiting some different areas of the hospital, and they had just done a brand new renovation at the time, and so she was showing us around and showing the different art, and down the hallway comes a patient in a hospital bed, and I remember thinking to myself, you know, I'm looking at this as a consultant, as this is a business, and I'm forgetting that it's about the patient in the bed. Mm-hmm. Because without them, it's just a really nice building with state-of-the-art equipment and great artwork and a lot of docs.
Yep.
But there is, I forgot the key element. And without that, you don't have a business. It doesn't exist, right?
Absolutely.
And I think that's what happens when decisions get made in a hospital, mm-hmm. is that we make decisions based on what we think is appropriate or what we think will get to the outcome that we have as our goal. But we don't put the patient in the center of those decisions.
Absolutely. That's what it's all about. And I'm glad you brought that up. You also brought up the Cleveland Clinic. Now, I know that you did an extensive ethnography study in 2012 for the Cleveland Clinic, where you examined a nursing unit that had received some of the clinic's worst scores in the Centers for Medicare Services survey. What is an ethnography study? And maybe you can share a bit of that and your findings and maybe some of the solutions that you came up with.
Sure. So ethnography is just, I tell people when they say, that's a big word, it's just an anthropology name for direct observation. And so that, in 2012, that started what we've done several hospitals since then, but you sit with a patient and observe their care, and then you have just a pen and pencil, your pen and paper, you're not bringing a computer, you're talking to the patient as much as they want to talk, and you're asking them some questions about their experience and about themselves, and just kind of generating a normal conversation. And you're collecting their feelings about their care. And some of them, you know, will tell you everything's wonderful, everything's been good, and you say thank you, that's great feedback. And then we'll ask questions like, well, if you could change something for the next patient, what would you change? And so we look at the people issues, the process issues, and then what's happening environmentally that we've noticed around the room and on our way into the unit. And then we gather that data and look for commonalities and themes. You know, was it a minor mention where it just happened one time, or are we seeing a trend? And a lot of times we can better understand some of the programs and initiatives that the hospital's put into place that the staff hasn't bought into. And it's obvious because during our observation, they're not doing some of the things that we've been told before we've gone on the unit that they're all doing. And so we always try to understand the behaviors behind why people don't do it. So it's less of an audit and more of a behavioral evaluation of what's really going on from the patient's perspective, from their bedside.
Mm-hmm.
So we know all the clinical terms because they tell us, and this is, we're doing this initiative, and we do bedside shift report where one nurse tells the other nurse in front of the patient, and we want it to look like this. But we want to know, what does it mean to the patient, and is it even important, and do they even know if it really happens or exists? And so when we started to collate all the findings, you know, the number one priority was, I want to get well. And close second was, I want to know that somebody cares enough they're going to respond to my needs when I need them. Because there's a helplessness about being in the bed. And that goes all the way to when I hit the call light, what is the clerk at the unit secretary or at the desk, what's the tone they use when they answer your call?
Mm-hmm.
Because that had relevance to the patient saying, I felt like I was bothering them.
Right.
Or I try not to call very often. And they even would make excuses for staff, and they would say, oh, I can tell my nurse is short-staffed today. And that may have been their excuse for someone who wasn't as attentive as they should have been. Or they'll say, I know there's sicker people than me. And so it was interesting because the patient wants the staff to succeed. Because you're in the bed, you want to know there's a winning team taking care of you.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Because it's not a good feeling when somebody... I always use the example, have you ever had... I've had a lot of bad blood tests. Phlebotomists who were,
yes,
weren't very good at finding my hard-to-find veins.
Yep.
And I love it when the next person comes in after you've been stuck and it hurts, and you're going, oh, no. And the next person comes in and she says, oh, yeah, I'm sorry. You had Jane. Jane's fairly new.
Oh.
She's not as good as some of our others. And I've been doing this for 20 years. So mental note, okay, next time I come in, I have to come in when Amy, who's now taking my blood, when is she working? Because if I get Jane again, so it diminishes my endorsement of the team. I don't think the team is as strong as I thought it was to begin with. I think there are some key players in the team that are good. But boy, I better get the right players when I come in.
Yep.
And I say that to staff. I'll say, I'll bet all of you, if you had to come here as a patient to your own hospital, could tell me what's the best day to come into the emergency, who you want as your physician, what unit you hope you're going to be on, and who you hope's taking care of you.
Mm-hmm.
And they all kind of have a smirk because they all know. So we all, as patients, want to know we've got the best care, right? So those are the two tops that we found, was just the responsiveness and, you know, everyone working together to help them get well. And then you go down the line and there's a lot of small details of things that could be a big deal, like quietness at night, being able to sleep. You know, the concept of, you know, good sleep in a hospital is kind of, it's kind of ironic because, you know, you're being checked sometimes every hour. So people say, you know, I had to go home to get sleep. And so, you know, what is the hospital doing to look at things that are important to the patient?
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you've got some training tools, your patient experience toolbox videos. I love them. Your topic choices are superb, such as, you know why I'm here, but do you know who I am? Here's a real good one. Would satisfaction scores change if healthcare employees received tips instead of paychecks? How do you come up with these topics, and how are they utilized in the hospitals?
So those were things that we were doing just to educate and get the word out. Since then, we are now doing, we have a whole production team that we've aligned with, and we are doing 52 task-to-touch videos that are meant to help hospital staff with emotional intelligence and understanding that it's the patient's house. So we've added some humor. There's 3-minute videos that a hospital can purchase a program, but it can come up on a smartphone or it can come up on an iPad. And be something that can be applied right away, because that's kind of what we wanted to do. Was we wanted a paradigm shift. I know this next generation, the 20-something-year-olds. You know, I grew up in a time when somebody said to do something and they were an authority, you did it because that's what you were trained to do and that's the way you were raised. Well, this next generation, they don't care about the because I said so,
mm-hmm.
And so they want to know what's in it for me, and so. What we're trying to do in the task to touch learning lessons is we're trying to create not only skill sets for them personally so that they're getting something out of it that will carry them into the next job or next career, but help them be able to cope better on the job. So when I see somebody get upset in the hallway and a patient overhears it and they think, oh my gosh, she's upset with me and I know differently, then that tells me that that employee needs a way to be more mindful when stress has gotten the better of her, or better of him, and they need to know that they need to be more self-aware of the way they come across and how they behave.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just those kinds of skill sets. And so when we came up with those funny titles, it was really based on real stories that we saw.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I would go in and I would ask the nurse manager, I'd say, can you recommend patients that I can go sit with? Which I love doing this work since being a patient. I love that I can sit bedside and just listen to their stories and give them hope. It really feels like my calling. And she said, oh yeah, I'll send you to this one older woman. She's quite a character. She writes a lot of notes, but she's you'll enjoy sitting with her. So I walked in and I said her name was Sarah, and I said, hi Sarah, and I introduced myself and I spent 3 hours with her. She was amazing. She told me her life story, and she had her notebook, and she, when I walked in, she was taking copious notes, and I thought, wow, she really is a note taker. And then I said to her, I go, well, tell me, you know, she had a rare disease that she knew all about. She had done a lot of research. And I said, wow, you know a lot. She said, I do, and it's a very specific kind of care plan, she said, because it's very rare and very few people have it in the world. And I said, well, I said, can you tell me what you did for a living? She said, yes, I was a medical researcher for 30 years for the National Institute of Health. And I looked at her, I said, oh. I said, so that's why you take a lot of notes. She said, yes. Because my disease is very rare, she said, I also take a lot of notes about the care and when I'm getting my medication and symptoms, and so that I keep a journal of it. And so they had named her the, you know, the older woman who took notes, when in fact it was, she was hardwired to be a researcher, had been one for 30 years, mm-hmm. and people didn't really understand who she was. When you put on that ill-fitting gown with the snaps on top, that, you know, one size fits all, which is just kind of a joke, and all of a sudden you don't even get acknowledged by your name. You know, I had to have emergency surgery in August for appendicitis, and I remember I got in Saturday, and Monday morning I had a caregiver, my nurse came in, and he said, "Hi, Mrs. Billingsley, I'm Kevin, your nurse." And I looked at him, I said, "You're the first person to use my name."
Oh.
And he said, "Can you tell me a little bit about yourself, you know, what do you do?" And I said, "You're the first person to ask me anything about me."
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, here I had been walking the halls after surgery, and of course, you know, you look your worst, right? You don't have your hair and your makeup's not on, and you're a mess, and I don't know how anyone could look good in that gown. And I would walk the hall, and I walked the hall twice a day for 2 days, and only one person gave me eye contact and said hi to me.
Wow.
Otherwise, I became invisible.
Wow.
See, you know, and there's a part of you that doesn't have the energy, but you want to say, do you know who I am? Do you know what I do?
Yeah.
You know, I speak on stages around the world. You know, there's a part of you that wants to say, hey, just at least talk to me as a human being. Mm-hmm. Just acknowledge that I'm a person, not that I'm a body in a bed that you keep coming in to, you know, check all my vitals and give me medication.
Yep. Earlier you talked about doing things that are scripted. On my mom's most recent hospital admission, when the gal was filling out the information as she was admitting her, she was asking her name, you know, your height and weight and your address and those type of things. And then she got to the obligatory soft questions. What three things make you happy? Then she said, what did you do, or what did you used to do for a living? And it was a great question. But when my mom told her and was a little bit excited about just telling her a little of it, she just kept her head into the computer and like, yeah, okay. And now, and then went on to the next question. And I thought, what's the point of asking these questions just so that you fulfilled some kind of a script when you obviously don't care? And I felt seriously placated by that and thought I would have preferred that they didn't even ask, rather than ask and then obviously not care.
Listen, you can be scripted and do it in such a tone, in such a way that says, I really don't care about you.
Yep.
And we all know that. And so it's no different when someone asks, hi, how are you? And they're out the door before you can answer.
Right.
It's like, why bother? You know, I mean, it really isn't connecting then, because then they've turned something that should have been connecting with a patient into another task.
Yep. Yep.
And they can go, check, did that today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Check. And then just becomes an impersonal checklist.
Yep. What can we do as a patient or a family member to improve our own patient experience? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think depending upon how sick you are, I highly recommend having an advocate with you. I'm all for spending the night in your loved one's room and looking out for them and making sure all of the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted.
Right.
Because you can't do it for yourself if you're really sick. And the other thing is, go ahead and question. Don't ever feel afraid to question. And you can do it in a gentle way. I mean, there's ways of saying things that don't come out as being confrontational or personal affront, but you can say, I remember the woman who was writing the notes, the nurse said, it's time for your medication. And she said to the nurse, can you tell me when I had my last dose? And the nurse said, yes, you had it at 1:00. And she flipped through her little notebook and she said, no, I had it at 1:30.
Mm-hmm.
So the nurse goes back to her computer and starts logging in, and she said, oh, you're right. So we are human beings taking care of human beings. Human beings make errors, And so if you think something's not right, or you're hearing mixed messages, or you hear something that you were told and then all of a sudden it's changed, you have every right to question it. And especially with medication, I mean, there were times when I was in the hospital in August, I said, you need to tell me what you're giving me. Even if it's the same medication, I want to know what you're giving me in my IV. We have a right to know.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a right to say no.
Yep.
They came in, I remember, with a Lovenox shot. A Lovenox shot is what they give you for blood clots.
Right.
And I said, and it's their protocol. And I said, she goes, I have your Lovenox shot. And I said, I'm not taking it. And she looked at me and I said, I've been walking the halls every day. I'm moving around. I'm getting out of bed all the time. I said, I don't need it. And she walked back out with it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
I had a right to say no. And I think patients just, they lay in bed and they go, I gotta do everything they
yes.
say. No, you don't. And if you think something's not right, you know your body better than they do. And so even if somebody says to you, well, that can't be true or that's not happening, you have the right to turn around and say, I know my body and this is what I'm feeling and I need you to hear me. And you can say things that are very concise and polite. And if that person doesn't hear you, most hospitals have a number that you can call. Call the number and say, I need some intervention here. I need some help. I'm not getting answers that I need. Because they want to make it better for you before you leave. Because then they can fix it. It's called service recovery. Mm-hmm. If you leave and you're upset, they can't do anything about it. Because now you're going to fill out the survey and you're going to just be upset. And you're going to slam them.
Yeah.
And they can't fix it. And they can't make it better for the next patient mm-hmm. or for you while you're there.
Yep. You have to speak up and stay alive, right?
You do, and you know, just because somebody has a degree, but I do know my body, and I do know how I handle certain drugs, and I do know when I feel pain, and you have every right. I remember one time getting an exam, and I said, wow, I go, that really burns. And he said to me, the doctor said, it doesn't burn, it just stings a little.
Oh.
And I looked at him, and I said, you can't tell me how I feel.
Yeah.
I know how I feel, but you can't tell me. It's not a one-size-fits-all.
Oh.
And if anyone is listening that has been diagnosed with cancer, I would tell you, do your research for your health, but do not get on there and look at statistics because it is not a one-size-fits-all cancer.
Right.
A lot of things they told me to expect did not happen to me. And I remember sitting there as a patient, and she, during radiation, I went through everything. I went through 16 chemos over 6 months. I had surgery, I had radiation, and then I had another drug for another year. And she said to me, well, when you get to about your 17th out of the 33 radiations, you are going to start having these symptoms. And she started listing them to me. And I said, I'm out.
Yeah.
I said, you may ask me if I have symptoms, but you may not auto-suggest to me
Ooh.
That I'm automatically going to have them.
Wow.
Because my journey is my own. And I haven't had a lot of symptoms that other people have had because I'm doing a holistic plan and I was in good health before I was diagnosed. So she took copious notes on her little pad. I'm
yeah.
sure she put something on there that said, you know, my last
yeah.
name starts with a B, and I'm sure she put a big B and it probably meant other things. But I didn't care. I just didn't want her to plant that seed because she was treating me like we were all the same.
Mm-hmm.
And you are not the same as a patient.
Mm-hmm.
How you respond can be totally different. You might be that 1%. That does it, you know, has a reaction or doesn't have a reaction and everyone else has. So.
Yeah, plus the power of suggestion sometimes can really get to people as well, and you can kind of self-manifest something that may not have been there.
And I tell people all the time, if you are sick, do not, there's so much power in your words. I had one woman in chemo just going, well, you never know. It could come back in my brain or it could come back in my lungs.
Yeah.
I might not even be here. I could die in 3 months. And I just thought, get away from me.
Yeah, don't
Stop
feed your
talking.
Mind that. Yeah. Wow, you are talking our language. I'm so glad that we're having this conversation today. Now, I know there's a whole lot more we can talk about, but is there anything specific that you would like to share today that we haven't touched upon?
You have choices. You know, I switched my surgeon from the surgeon who put my port in to that surgeon who did my breast surgery. Total different surgeon. Because this surgeon said some kooky things to me before I got ready to go in to have my port in. I said to her, you do a lot of these? And she said, well, I'm doing a lot of them today. And I said, so it's a pretty straightforward procedure. And she said, Well, you always hope you don't nick a lung.
And oh, my.
On wood, and then she walked out the door. And I looked at my husband, and I said, I think I need to pray, because I said, I didn't even think about nicking a lung. I didn't even know that was possible.
Oh.
And I thought, you know, that was her weird sense of surgeon humor that she should be sharing with another surgeon, not with a patient.
Yeah.
And I thought, I cannot have her doing my surgery. I can't. She's freaking me out.
Yeah.
So I switched, and I had the right to switch. And it was okay, and I did it in a polite way. But, you know, she ended up taking my port out, so I saw her again. So she knows I switched to another doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, patients have choices, and I think that's what healthcare is finding out, is that patients do have choices, mm-hmm. and they have a voice, and they have opinions. But I will tell you that the hospitals I worked with, and I've worked with a lot of hospitals, they want to do a good job.
Yes.
Truly, the majority of them desire to do a good job. They just don't always know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And you have an opportunity to educate them. So you could think of yourself in the bed as an unpaid mystery shopper. And you could say to them, I just want you to be aware that this and this and this are happening. And if you're not getting the response from the person you're telling, you're probably telling the wrong person.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's important to go ahead and say, when that manager they call it rounding, when they go stop in to visit you, or you have the card that says call us, call them and just say, I'm not complaining, but I just have some suggestions. They are more than welcome. They want to hear what you have to say. So never underestimate the power of your feedback, because it does make a difference.
I agree. And I just wrote down unpaid mystery shopper. So everyone listening, feel free to speak up and have your say and consider yourself, as Brooke said, an unpaid mystery shopper. I love it. I love it. Where can we find out more about you, your work, and how can folks contact you, Brooke?
I respond to all my emails. So that my name, Brooke, with an E at the end, at PerStrat, which is short for Perception Strategies. And that's my website. So it's the three W's, PerStrat.com, PerStrat.
All right, PerStrat.com. This interview will be posted on our website, and there will also be a link to that website so folks can find you from there if they can't remember. Wow, thank you so much, Brooke, for sharing your years of personal experience and your expertise with us today. I know you've given us a lot to think about, and I so appreciate having met you, and let's stay in touch and come back anytime you've got some updates for us.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Pat. I enjoyed talking to you as well.
Jerry the Gerb with a Speak Up and Stay Alive Healthcare and Hospital Safety Snippet just for you. Here's our expert, Pat Rulo.
Hey, Jerry. Do you know that hospital housekeepers are some of the most important people when it comes to keeping you from harming patients? That's right. Germs like you are everywhere. And thanks to the housekeeping staff, you and your friends are wiped away on a daily basis. No secondary hospital-acquired infections thanks to these folks. Yet, they are often the least respected and least paid. Go figure. My friend, Daryl Hicks, author of the book Infection Prevention for Dummies, has this to say. A well-trained, conscientious housekeeper, given the proper tools and proper time to do his or her job, will prevent more infections than a room full of doctors can cure. So I tell my listeners, the next time they are in the hospital, either as a patient, an advocate, or a visitor, hug a housekeeper. Say thank you and appreciate all they do to keep everyone safe and on their way back home. For more healthcare and hospital safety tips and tools, listen to the nationally syndicated radio show Speak Up and Stay Alive and visit the website speakupandstayalive.com. So look out for the housekeepers, Jerry. They're coming after you.
Listen to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. For more information, go to speakupandstayalive.com.
After a hospital stay or other health issue, rehabilitation and therapy, physical, occupational, or speech therapy are imperative if you want to regain your strength and previous abilities. When it's haphazard or non-existent, you lose. And that's why your rehabilitation care choice is crucial. Let's spend the next 2 minutes with Lauren Teschner from the Welsh Home in Rocky River to gain a better understanding. Welcome, Lauren.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Why, tell us why, is daily therapy so important, and what does the Welsh Home do to accommodate maximum recovery?
The majority of the people, when they come for a short-term rehabilitation stay, on day one when we set the goals, their main goal is to, one, go home. And the way that we accomplish that is by the therapy department. The therapy department was once explained to me by a resident who had a complete success story and returned home as they use a gentle but firm touch. So even when she was too tired that day, they were gentle and sympathetic that, you know, she is going through a healing process, but firm in their approach that if you want to get home and you want to accomplish this goal, this is what we need to do. We have therapy at the Welsh Home 7 days a week. The reason we offer it 7 days a week is that we want to make sure that people are using the maximum of what their insurance benefit will allow for. Most of the time, the traditional insurances will say that people can receive 5 days a week of therapy. The reason we have it those 7 days a week is to accommodate people who come to us on the weekend or people who maybe they really need to take a day off of the therapy and restart it the next day so that they can continue to receive the maximum that their insurance benefit will allow for.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Lauren.
You're welcome.
The Welsh Home offers state-of-the-art skilled rehabilitation therapy on-site to meet your individual needs. Whether you're looking for short-term or long-term care, the Welsh Home can help. And you don't have to be Welsh to call the Welsh Home your home. Call them to arrange for a tour or simply to ask questions. 440-331-0420. 440-331-0420. Or visit welshhome.com.
Hello, my name is Joe. Is this Pat Rulo, the host of Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio?
Why, yes, it is.
Who are you?
Who am I? I am you. I am every person who has ever been in a hospital or doctor's office and has received less than acceptable treatment.
Who are you?
I am you, the person who got an infection during a simple outpatient procedure.
Wait, who are you?
I am you, the patient whose questions are ignored, who struggles to speak to the doctor as he or she has one foot out the door. I am the missed heart attack, the hospital-acquired infection, the wrong diagnosis, the unanswered call button.
Oh, so you're all about me. Do you have a quick tip to help me stay safe?
Take care of yourself by paying attention to infection opportunities. Where are they lurking? Waiting room magazines, TV remotes, elevator buttons, doorknobs, restrooms. The opportunity to acquire an infection in the hospital is huge. Germs and bacteria are everywhere. They float in the air, live on your clothes and hands, and reside on everything in sight. The consequences of a hospital-acquired infection are grave, yet prevention is simple. Be a germaphobe, be a clean freak. And Joe, wash your hands often and remind others to wash theirs before touching you.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on WHKW AM 1220. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
You are listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive Patient Safety Radio, and I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, the voice for patient safety, and also the author of the book, Speak Up and Stay Alive, the Patient Advocate Hospital Survival Guide. One way to improve your patient experience is to be ready for it. And one way to be ready for it is to listen to this program, which you are obviously doing, but also to do a bit of reading. And that is why I wrote the book, to give everyone a heads up as to what you might encounter during a hospital stay, such as drug-induced or hospital-induced diabetes, medication errors, infections, harmful diagnostic tests, malnutrition, equipment misuse, lots of things you wouldn't even dream of, yet often occur. I always say, how could you prevent something from happening to you if you don't even know that it could happen? And that is what the book will give you. So order your very own copy today. It's only $19.95, plus a few dollars for shipping, and you can do this right now at the website. speakupandstayalive.com, speakupandstayalive.com, all spelled out. Or you can order by phone. Just leave a message on my studio line and I will get back to you. 440-725-5462. That's 440-725-5462. And if you want even more, invite me to speak. If you have a group of people, a club, association, church, school, women's group, Rotary, Kiwanis, or any medical group or hospital, it really doesn't matter. My message is universal. No one is exempt from a hospital visit. You'll be there one day, either as a patient or an advocate. a loved one, or a visitor. And wouldn't it be smart to know what to look out for? Call me to discuss a few details. 440-725-5462. I would love to meet you. 440-725-5462. And let's see, what else did I want to tell you? Oh, yes. Next week, I'm excited to introduce you to a Harvard-trained medical doctor who will share the harrowing tale of how he ran horribly amok through his addiction to prescription medication. And he'll share his recovery and his book titled Free Refills. Great title. And it promises to be enlightening as we take a peek at drug use from a physician's point of view. So come back next week. Same time, same place. And until we meet again, I hope you have a healthy and a happy week, free from bagel-smearing receptionists wearing fake tiaras. I am Pat Rulo, and I am your guide to safe and successful healthcare and hospital encounters.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
Hi, I'm Pat Rulo, hostess of Speak Up and Stay Alive Patient Safety Radio, heard right here every Saturday morning at 9 o'clock. Give the gift of summer this winter with a discounted season pass to Pioneer Waterland and Dry Fun Park in Chardon, Ohio. And that includes free parking for the entire season. Family pass for $4, $195. Order your season passes today at pioneerwaterland.com or by phone 440-285-5200. That's 440-285-5200.